Hey, welcome back. My name is Manoj, your host, and this is the Rare Earth Podcast. Let the conversations begin. Welcome back to Season 3 of the Rare Earth Podcast. I'm so excited to actually kickstart this episode after a long break. So Season 3 will feature some of the coolest friends that I have recently started connecting on AirChat. And if you haven't heard of AirChat, then you definitely must Google it. It's a brand new social platform which helps you connect with some of the smartest minds in the world. I will not go explaining more on that. I want you to check it out. So in this episode, I have conversation with brand new friend of mine. Her name is Ina. She hails from Albania, but currently she lives in Japan. And in between Albania and Japan, her adventures in traveling. So this conversation is very fascinating because she's a writer who left her regular full-time job to pursue her dream. And we also get to hear the story behind how Nawal Ravikant was instrumental in making that shift from quitting her full-time job and becoming unemployed. And in this episode, we also speak about the different countries that Ina has traveled. We speak about how she really got adapted and getting started in Japan. Then we speak about how this Japanese culture has actually influenced Ina in all areas of her life, including how she arrives at some creative designs. So I would suggest that join into the conversation because this is a very fun-filled conversation. I've kept it very easygoing and you get a glimpse of our world while I have this chance to really drill Ina with a lot of questions that I had originally in my mind. In fact, this conversation should be a reminder that it's never too late to go after your dreams. So I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Hey Ina, welcome to the show. I am so excited to have you join the first ever episode of Season 3 and lovely to have you.
I'm so happy to be here and thank you so much for invitation, Manoj. It's been lovely to meet you in person as well. And now we have this chance to chat on podcasts and I have seen other shows as well of yours and I really liked how good and honest you make the conversation, like the flow. So I'm so honored to be in your podcast, actually.
No. I think I was just thinking, sometimes some of the best conversations happen through friends when you're actually, you know, having a chit chat, having lighthearted conversation. And some of the interesting ideas come through those conversations. So I thought we should definitely start with somebody that I know really well. And in fact, why don't you tell the story of how we connected? How did we even meet?
Oh, yeah, sure. My pleasure. So I met Manoj through AirChat. So AirChat is an application invested by Nawal, who is like a big name on startup angel investment in USA. And I think in the world too, I'm not sure, but he is a big name. And we connected through AirChat and it works like it's a platform where everybody asks and talk with Nawal or other people like Brett Hall or I forgot no other names, but and then I posted a question. I was going to Bangalore and I said, hey, is anybody in Bangalore and want to meet up? And Manoj replied and said, hey, I am there. And he put like a list of suggestions and we started to chat. And this is the beginning of our story. And eventually we met in Bangalore too, my family and his family. And it was lovely.
I think it was definitely, I felt when we met up, it was like almost we knew for a while rather than the first meeting.
I felt that too. Like I know Manoj from maybe 10 years or something. I don't know. It was like that.
No, but that's great. That's great. And I think, for context, people may not know where you are currently based. So you're right now in Tokyo, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry. I should have mentioned that.
No, that's
I'm
cool.
I'm currently in Tokyo and I fly over to Bangalore 8 hours or something.
Yeah.
Love the airport, by the way, man. It was so amazing. It felt like Dubai. I don't know. And my image of India was from the movies was very different. And when I came to Bangalore, I was very impressed by the investments and how hard people work. And the food was amazing. Oh my God. Dosa is something I loved it. Every breakfast, me and my husband take dosa. And Bangalore is going to be something in my memory. So I'm very happy to check India from my list.
No, that was wonderful. Yeah. I think media does a poor job of representing or casting a picture of India, which is very incorrect, I feel sometimes. So people, when they come from out, they generally have a certain image of the country and then they are shocked with the development and changes. So
true. we misconcept, I think, many stuff, and seeing the world by your eyes is better rather than being relying on other sources. Yeah. That is something I learned in this trip too.
Yeah. When I look at your journey, and the reason, one of the reasons I really wanted to have conversation with you is because you are somebody who's traveled quite a lot, and we'll touch upon where you started and where you are headed. Yeah. And you're somebody who really enjoys traveling, but you enjoy food. So tell me a little about your origin story. So I know that you're from Albania. Take us back and where you started and which are the different cities that you stayed and experienced.
That's correct. I am from Albania. I come from a small town in the south called Fieri. And when I was, I think the first trip I did in my life was when I was in the sixth grade, like maybe 12 years old. I went to Turkey. It was the first time to go on a plane. And from that time, I never stopped. Since 12 years old, I started to travel all around the world. I have visited many places in Europe because Albania is like in the central Europe. We can visit Italy for an hour and a half, to Germany for 2 hours, and then and so on. And we did many excursions with my school trips. And I can just name a few countries I visited if you want. I was, believe it or not, even though I'm short, I was on a basketball team, even though I was rubbish at it.
Oh, really? Wow.
At the time we did a school trip to have, it was like a type of a championship of basketball for a junior high school, something like that, in a tournament in Austria, in Vienna. And we did this trip from Albania. We went to Italy by ship. And then from that, we did the road trip with a bus. And so we passed Italy. And then we passed Slovenia, all, I think, Austria. It took maybe like 10 hours driving a car or something like that. Yeah. So it was tiring, obviously, but when you're a child, you don't care about this thing. It's just very fun because it's something new and exciting. And I didn't have a lot of money that time either. Of course, my mom gave me some money and I had to use them carefully for the food and everything. But this is how I started to go abroad. And I'm very grateful. And I think I'm lucky in that sense because I could visit many places, and that helped me to make myself very open-minded. Like, everybody has different realities and everybody has different experiences in the world. So I felt I don't want to judge people, like whatever they're experiencing. I don't want to have a judgmental or a point of shaming them or anything like that. So this was thanks to the trips I did all around the world.
So did your parents have a culture of traveling quite a bit? And was that an early exposure you had because of your parents taking the family out more frequently? Or was it in the school and later in life?
Yeah, my parents, my father especially, does like trading in China. So he travels around mostly like in Europe and China, like in Asia. He goes often. My mom sometimes follow him, sometimes don't. But he is a person who I got encouraged a lot to travel. And thanks to him, I did this and he supported as well. So, yeah. Wow. But school trips, not always, depends. Because Albania is still like in developing phase. And so economically speaking, it's not very good, not very stable or strong. Not everybody can afford to go to many places. However, since the trips are very near in Europe, it can be like $100 for a one-way ticket or round trip. I don't know, depending on the season as well. But it's relevantly good price if you think about it. So you can take advantage of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you did mention about the way traveling changes your perspective about the world and the people. And I'd like to know, what is the key difference that you noticed with that kind of an experience? When you start looking at different cultures, when you start meeting different people, what is the internal change that happens, you know, when one does that, as compared to somebody who's staying local all their life, right? What is the contrast that you notice?
Yeah, so for example, I come from a certain values of family and society from Albania. So I thought thinking certain thing, I cannot come up with an example now, but I thought I was restrained by society and my family to think like this way. But then when I met other people, they had totally different perspectives of how they solve issues. And it's funny because they are also strained from their society and their family. It's like we all are connected to our cultures and our family values and so on. But what is important when you travel, I think you break these boundaries. You figure out who you are, basically. By traveling a lot, you figure out who you are, what you want to have for value, and what you accept. And people who travel a lot are usually generous and very open-minded. And they have good problem solving, I think, as people, very creative in solving. Yeah. Because, you see, I can take, now in this moment, because I live in Japan now, and I am Albanian, but I worked with Americans as well. And when I think of a problem, I have three different cultural perspectives I can solve the issue. So that's something that traveling gave me, but also working with other cultures. Like even in university, for example, I had many Indian friends. They were genius, like in engineering, mathematics, and they give me ideas. I'm not so strong on math myself, but they give me these ideas. And here you go. I get three perspectives to solve one issue. So that's something cool, I think, in my opinion.
That's great. Yeah, I feel when I talk to people who travel a lot, I get such fresh and unique perspectives from them as compared to somebody whom I would be locally speaking with. So yeah, I think it's a very valid point. So what brought you to Japan? So now you told about from Albania, you went to different places. But what brings you to Japan of all the places?
I don't know, Manoj, look, I went to UK. I studied in UK and I did my master's degree there. And I studied like international trading and logistics, basically. Okay. And during that time, there was like a small community of Japanese there. And I got to know them and I liked their culture. But never in my mind thought that I wanted to visit or live in Japan. And one time in 2016, I decided to visit Japan, and we didn't have a Japanese embassy in Albania, so I had to bring my passport in Italy. It was totally a pain as a process. Now we do have an embassy, which is good. I'm happy for that.
Yeah.
And when I did that, and I come to Japan, and the flight that time was very cheap, like round trip, like $600, as compared to now, it's insane. It's insane with Europe. Like, I cannot even touch. And I came here and I fell in love with this country. And I remember I was in the train and I felt, you know what? One day I will come to live here. I said that to myself.
Wow.
And fair enough, after 1 year and a half, I went back home. Everything I was watching on every sign tells me about Japan. And I feel like there is like a calling. I have to go to Japan. I go to the street and somebody tell me about some Japanese game or some Japanese anime, or I meet a friend, they tell me about this Japanese thing, and I'm like, okay, this is something. Or am I exaggerating? I don't know, but I need to listen to my heart. And I did, and I came to study Japanese as a first step.
Wow.
And I came here with a student visa. And believe me, when I came in Japan, I knew nobody. Like nobody waiting in the airport. I have to figure out all of the things by myself. I have no place to stay, no house, no dormitory, nothing. So I have to figure it out. And I think that was the fun part as well.
Oh my God.
Like figuring it out. Yeah.
I must say that is a very bold adventure you endured or took it up, because of all the places that people speak about when they have, like they can go to any European country, they can go to US, they can go to Australia. You definitely feel a sense of familiarity, at least with the language, right? That you can speak English, somebody will understand you. Like there is that element of, okay, so I can express myself. But Japan, I'm sure, you're in a great place. Everybody seems polite, but then you just can't communicate. So how did you even navigate those initial days? Like isn't it extremely strange experience? What was it for you?
Like from all over the places, as my mom says, you had to choose Japan, you know? And exactly. I chose Japan because I knew nothing. The main idea of me was to choose. I have this idea that I can start over any time in life. Throw me anywhere in the world, I will stand up.
Wow.
That's my mentality, physical and resilience, like mental training. And because of I don't know anything, it makes more fun for me. I don't know how to explain to you. Obviously, it was super challenging and more difficult than I expected. For example, a night before my flight to come to Tokyo, it just hit me. I realized that I'm doing such a crazy thing. Why I'm doing this? I thought, I have no reason to do this. I was 24 at that time. But then I thought, you know what? Maybe now or never. I don't want to die with regrets. At least I'm going to go for it. And I'm happy I did this. It was a very bold move, but something that shaped me as a person. And I figure out myself. I figure out my life and I figure out who am I and all these things. So thanks to this experience. And I think I want to encourage anybody to get out of their comfort zone and go places that they have no idea.
Yeah.
Zero. Because there you can try your skills. Like, I don't speak the language here, but somehow I need to communicate. But how? So you start with small gestures and stuff like that. And even like in the neighborhood, I had many old people. And for me to connect with them, I don't know how to speak Japanese. But I can cook. So I cooked and I brought them food.
Wow.
And then they talked to me. And there was some way I start to understand a little bit. And then the next day I buy, for example, I love cooking. So I buy some basil, but I don't know how to put them in the vase and how to fix them. And I ask their help and they help me and they chat to me. And little by little, I start to integrate myself in society by just living, being a human. If I don't know how to do something, I ask and they help me, teach me.
That's incredible. Like that's that. Incredible. And I don't think this is a very common story. These are rare because people taking like a one-way ticket to a country like Japan, trying to figure out the language, the people, the culture, it's absolutely mind-blowing. To me, at least, just imagining that. But you also mentioned that you have this ability to figure out things and you have the confidence that if you were put in any place, you would can figure it out. How did you develop that mental toughness or a resilience to have that kind of confidence? Because that's not common, right? So how did you have that?
I think this is also, when you asked me one time, something I want people to know about me. This is one point. And they don't know usually because they think she studied, for example, abroad. She has a degree and she can find job very easily. But reality is not like that. I'm in Japan, but I don't speak language. Nobody will hire me just because I can speak English. They need somebody that speaks Japanese, obviously. So I was going to many job interviews and right away they tell me, oh, we're real sorry. You cannot work with us. So I started to face many rejection. I faced many rejections even when I was in Albania because I thought, okay, I have this degree and probably I can get a good job like in a nice corporate and stuff like that. It's a stupid idea now that I think about it, but I believe that one of the thing is that getting rejected a lot, like it makes me grow a thicker skin and I become to the point that, okay, if I cannot find a job, then I will make it happen in another way. So I found another solution, studying Japanese. And by studying Japanese, I landed my first job here as well. Basically, it comes all from the failures. I failed a lot, but I never gave up because I thought, I want to try, I want to test. And then I want to relax myself as well. I want to say, okay, if you cannot make it, it's okay. You can go back home, but at least you did. So I like to have both an Evelina and a good Ina, both to chat with each other. And it's here in my mind. But yeah.
Oh, no, that is fascinating. So Ina, right now, you said you landed your first job in Japan. And then as far as I know, right now, you don't work for anybody. You are on your own. I also know that Nawal Ravikant had a big influence in your life in making this transition. I would like to know that story.
Oh, yeah. This is a fun story. And that's true. I started to work in Japan and I was very excited. And
could you tell us what were you working as and what was your earlier career?
My first job. So I was working for a food and media event. And they had a famous chocolatier patissier here in Japan. And we were in charge to grow the brand, obviously, and to make many pop-up shops and sell the brand and promote it. This was the job. Although I learned a lot of those things, it became to a point that I felt like a slave. In Japan, it doesn't matter how good you can be in a certain thing or how much experience you have. If you start a company, you start from zero. So you have to start from to do the most rubbish stuff, making coffee, making photocopy, cleaning, fixing. And obviously, I don't mind to do those things because it's normal. And I don't think it should have like hierarchy for doing this type of stuff.
Yeah.
But it means that you have to start from zero. And the hierarchy is very important. You have to respect the people who are senpai or like seniors in you, mm-hmm. and your boss and shacho and stuff like that. So we have to learn also like business or keigo. Keigo is a Japanese formal language, which you have to use. It's a must when you do business. And I learned keigo from my company, from working with them, because I didn't know how to use that before. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when I'm with a friend, I can say a certain word, but if I'm with a boss, I cannot use that. I have to use a polite way of saying. I learned Japanese from school, but also more from working in hand-to-hand, mostly like kanjis and keigo, like business speaking. And I still don't know all of it, obviously. It's something it needs many years to practice and learn it. And I don't have it yet. But I felt my values, and I didn't feel like, how do you say that? Integrity is not aligned with the company's values. So I felt many times stuck. And however, I didn't have the courage to quit, you know? I felt this is something I can never do. And at that time, my boyfriend, now husband, said to me, I really like this guy. His name is Naval. And he has very good tweets and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I have no idea. Who is this person? Who is Naval Ravikant? Anyway. And he said, yeah, he's like a philosopher, but he gives like very good tips and on especially like life, but also like money concepts and stuff. And he bought the book. The book is written by Eric Jorgensen, if I'm correct. He wrote the book for Naval. And after he finished reading it, I started to read. And I felt like such a revelation, completely changing my core ideas about money and life. I thought the only way to get rich is to work for an employer. That's how I thought. But with Naval, that idea goes straight to the rubbish. You cannot be rich working for someone, for an employer. You cannot be rich if you value just like working hourly rate. You become rich while it compounds. You stay, you sleep, and the money compounds by itself. That's the idea that hit me and got me. And I was like... We had a short break from my work. It was summer. I remember very well. It was August. And we were like in a prefecture in Chiba. And I read that. And then on Monday, I made up my mind on Sunday already. You know what? I'm going to quit, I said. And I told this to my boyfriend at the time. And he said, really? You sure? Yeah, I said, I cannot take anymore. I need to do something with my life. That's how it felt. And I went on Monday and I quit the job. And I still have very good communication though with that company. I still keep in touch. But yeah, from Naval, I became jobless.
I'm curious about the conversation that you had with your employer. What did you tell them? Like, why are you quitting?
Of course, I didn't say about Naval. It looked like I am some part of cult or who is Naval? He doesn't know. He's Japanese too.
You're creating a bad brand image of Naval in Japan then.
No. I think Japanese will learn a lot from him. And if they follow, it's like following your heart. That's why I like Naval. I just said to him, sorry, I think my values doesn't align well.
Basically. Oh, you mentioned that?
I said my values and the company values or what they want is a bit different from mine, and I want to do something on my own. I want to do a business or do something else. I don't know, I said, I haven't figured it out, but I want to try. And I had to do like preparation and stuff, and before I quit, to make everything ready for the other person to get trained and stuff.
Oh, the handover. So, yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, the handover. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it went like that. Yeah.
Wow. And then knowing your pattern in life, I know that you jumped into adventures from one to another.
Yeah. So, jumping adventures. Yeah.
So you obviously did not have a very clear game plan. What are you going to do next? But you were very clear that you do not want to continue what you were doing.
Yes.
Okay. So, could you tell us a little more about how did you transition from that to the next thing? What did you take up?
On the same timing, I got introduced to Web3 and crypto, Bitcoin, and I learned a lot about Web3, and I landed a job on a famous exchange. I'm not going to name it now, just for security purposes.
Yeah.
And I worked there for 2 years more. It was a great starting point for me to learn about all the concepts from DeFi, Web3, DAOs. There are so many concepts now going on with NFT, and learn from very smart people, intelligent people, especially about decentralization of finance and so on. And that I realized that people in Web3 are very independent. And shortly, I think in 2019 or something, it started to become very popular with podcast and newsletter during Corona. This started to boom, I think, and it's still continuing. And I got this idea that I always wanted to write, but I didn't have courage because I thought I'm not a good writer or I don't know. So I got this idea and I thought I'm going to share my stories about Japan. And I made this newsletter, which is called Be Curious.
Be Curious, yeah.
It.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Be Curious.
It's one of the best Japan-focused newsletters that I've read. So I think you're doing an incredible job there.
Thank you so much.
Highly recommended. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a honest story. Honest stories, and I research a lot in Japanese language and I translate them to English, and it's just my feelings. I like to put my perspective as well there while I research and put stuff, and it's growing now. I started this summer after I quit the second job. I started this summer and it's going well. I want to grow it more, obviously, but it's something that gives me a lot of pleasure, and I still be in touch with many good people, and I hope to grow this more. Yeah.
Yeah. When I read a couple of your newsletters, it has informations which are not very commonly shared in the world about Japan. And so you have a way of exploring Japanese culture. You give perspectives which is very relatable. When I read your newsletter, I can understand. Oh. And you also give the sources from where you actually got the information. You give the credits. So that's that's definitely a lot of research work, I feel, before you even publish it.
Can I tell you just one thing? I get very influenced by Steve Jobs. I think he was one of the greatest people in the world. And in one of his speech, I think many people are aware of his speech on, it's like a university acceptance speech. I don't know if you have seen that. And in the end, he say, follow your heart. Somehow she knows where you have to be. And in the end, he finished the speech, stay foolish, stay hungry. And that's my mentality for my newsletter or my life. My philosophy of life is always be curious. Never make the small child inside of you, the inner child, die. Always keep it alive. Ask questions and try to find things out on your own and so on. But never be like stagnation. Always change, read, learn, dance, learn a new hobby. I don't know. Just be curious, basically.
So
that's the thing about Japan, too. It's not like I put there, it's not like a travel guide. Forget about that. I will not give you a travel guide where to go in Tokyo or Kyoto, which is good still, but I just want to give like a more also like science based and stuff like that, which aligns with me.
I think when we met, I definitely remember there is that element of playfulness in your personality too. You really are definitely very curious, and you constantly ask questions to understand the culture and the story behind everything. Why do you think people are not curious as they become more adults? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a very good question. I think they get bored, or how to say that, they get restricted from their works. Most of the time people work and have to work like certain type of jobs which requires a lot of effort and obviously a 9-to-5, and they have other obligations too. I think with a wife, they probably forget about being a child still, or they think it's wrong. I'm not sure, because I see this on elder people or people who have just retired. They think that their life starts now. Yeah. For me, it's wrong. Life should start from the moment you're born. And then anytime you can do it, that you shouldn't wait to retirement to enjoy life or do stuff that you always wanted to do. Because you see, with age, even though you have desires, with age, probably you cannot achieve a lot due to the disabilities or, let's say, physical power, stuff like that. For example, my parents now have time, but they cannot go snowboarding. Obviously, they're going to break their legs. I don't know. It will not work.
Yeah. Okay. So in one of your newsletters, you had mentioned about the design aesthetics of Japan, right? Like, you definitely have a liking towards minimalist design and innovative designs. When we look at Japan, everything looks so well thought through, and it is minimalistic, but it looks beautiful. And so can you share some highlights from Japanese design that really resonates with you and pulls you?
Yeah, Japanese design is something, in my opinion, that has this distinction around the world, that if you see it with Japanese design, in terms of even the colors or patterns of the paper style, or there are many elements to it. And how they have done this, it's amazing. It's very related to their craftsmanship, I believe, and also the humility as a value that they put in their work. So they have this mentality of always being poor, in the sense that you can always learn something. As a craftsman, you always learn something. There's nothing like perfection. Usually artisans are never happy with what they do, in the sense that they always want more. And I think if you know the wabi-sabi connection in Japanese society, usually this is used in tea ceremonies as well. If you experience a tea ceremony, the room is a 4-tatami mat. It has maybe like a small ways, and then a woman wearing a kimono perform the tea. They warm the tea and you hear just the sound. And it's surrounded by a garden, beautiful garden. And the beauty of it is, Manoj, is, I'm just going to share this story with you. Before, it was made by samurais in that era. And later it started to be performed by women. And when you enter this room, it has a small door.
Okay.
And when you enter, you have to remove your, for example, samurai had to remove their katana, or like, how do you say?
The sword. Yeah, yeah.
Meaning, it's also like mental thinking. You remove all your social ranks. You remove everything from whoever you are. So when you enter to this room, you are naked, in a sense, because nobody knows who you are and nobody cares who you are. You are there just for the tea, and you are going to enjoy this tea, matcha. In this case, they will make the matcha powder and you will drink it. And you have to respect the tea and the person who does this, and you are surrounded by nature. And it's really like spiritual. And I think the Zen philosophy, with this humility and simplicity, it's everything is in harmony, or the kanji wa, they say it. So in that sense, that is why Japanese design, in my opinion, have sustained for a long time, because they are proud of it, but they also have this mentality of harmony in nature and harmony in life as well. And they want to connect with nature by these things and having this humility, or wabi-sabi. Sabi, it's rust, and wabi, it's tarnished as well. And they find this beautiness on rust steel. It's beautiful. You can enjoy that. So that's why I think Japanese design is...
I never thought of design from the angle of humility the way you explained. That's really interesting. So they have that sense of constantly improving it, because they feel they are learning and they haven't arrived at perfection, right? So that's very interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because as philosophy as well, find beauty in loneliness, in on misery, actually. Zen find it thinks that you as a human grow more like spiritually if you struggle more. They find it beautiness. And Japanese life in general or culture has this mentality too. It is also reflected on their design. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you see Japanese houses, they are all the same. And before, they make like wooden houses without even using nails.
Yeah.
It's just the connection between the woods.
And they interlock.
It belongs for a long time. Mm. Yeah, they interlocking like that. So it's pretty cool how they did it. I'm impressed. I don't know how to do it, obviously. But it's something that I respect them a lot for these things. Yeah.
That's great. I think so your newsletter definitely showcases these rare culture highlights from Japan, and it's beautiful to read, and it enlightens me also on things that I was completely unaware of. I'm curious about your creative process. I want to know, can you walk us through your creative process? How do you approach like a new project or any new idea, and how do you get over your, if there is any block that you feel, creative block, how do you overcome that? What's your approach to any new learning?
I am constantly in the library. I go there, I take books, I read. And while I read, somehow I got inspiration from something. And then I start to research on that. And probably I will find something and probably I will not find something, depending on the topic. It's never like I have so many unfinished topics because I cannot find something that I want to find, like I want to write about that. So this is a certain pain because you are on the flow and then it stops and then you get this block and I have to find another idea. The good thing is I have a 6 day to prepare for the next newsletter. So that gives me a bit of time. I'm not like how to say, I do it on the last minute. No, but I always have some ideas beforehand and I reach out to people before when I want to interview, for example, and then I get this. And basically I get inspiration from daily conversation with people or from a cafe, from a book I'm reading, from a podcast I'm listening. And this is how I get inspired. For example, I made a topic on the efficiency of trains inspired by the slime mold. And I listened to this on Joe Rogan podcast. He invited famous mycologists. Paul, I forgot his surname now, but I can check it. And he said that Japanese use this slime mold for making, to like mapping, like an efficient road mapping for the trains. And I thought, this is insane. What is he talking? This is rubbish. No, he was so right. He was so right. When I researched the topic, the scientific paper, this was published in 2009, I think. Like, imagine, many years ago. And we just learn it now. There's so much knowledge and information we don't know. But this is how I got inspired. And I researched and I made the topic. And that newsletter was one of the most popular one now.
Amazing.
That people
amazing.
Really like. Yeah.
So you mentioned about spending a lot of time reading. So that brings me to the question I wanted to ask you was, are there any books that you would like to recommend or which has influenced your thinking and has it changed your worldview based on reading these books? So something that comes to mind, you can recommend as many you want.
Yeah. Oh, I think one of the books that really shaped my ideas is The Courage to be Disliked by a Japanese author, Ichiro Fumiko. If I'm correct.
Okay, we can look it up, no problem.
Yeah, we can look it out. Yeah, it's Ichiro Kishimi and Fumitake Koga, but people will not remember, so just I'm going to put the title, The Courage to be Disliked. So it explains the principal psychology of Adler, and he makes it like the conversation of a philosopher and a teacher. It goes back to the Socrates, to the like Greek philosophy, which all the Greek philosophy is based on dialogue, and you learn from the dialogue, basically, a teacher and a student.
Student.
That's how it works. Yeah. And in this case, he makes the same situation like he is a teacher, like a type of professor, and then a student, like a young person who don't know things about life, and this old person who is wise and so on. And he explains many topics about boundaries, how to make boundaries, how to make interpersonal relationship and how all our problems come and so on. It's very good. It talks for psychology, but it's easy to digest. so people don't feel like lost. For example, if you read Nietzsche, it's very difficult, in my opinion, to understand it with the terms. But here it's a dialogue and you feel that you as a person, as a reader, you have experienced all of what they say. Yeah, it's very, I don't remember now very well because I read it like
years ago. Yeah.
But yeah. I really love that book. And I think the title is very good. The Courage to be Disliked, basically.
Yeah. I think some books, definitely the key message is right there in the title itself, where you can remember the whole point. So that's that book definitely delivers that. I haven't read the book, but I do get the gist. So I'll definitely check it out. Any other books that comes to mind?
Yes, there are other books. Of course. Naval Almanac, I mentioned earlier. That's the book that if you want to become successful.
Unemployable first.
Unemployable first. And what else? I really like reading about human body as well and food in general, like anthropology and stuff. And a really good book I read was by Dan Saladino. It's called Eating to Extinction. And he explains how many of the food...
Eating to Extinction?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more about it. Yeah.
It's a great book. It's quite thick. It's like a Bible, I feel. He explained that the world's rarest food are disappearing from the world. And how human at this moment, all humanity and population in the world consumes uniform food, meaning we consume the same type of rice, the same type of banana, the same type of meat or eggs all around. It's the same seed or breed. Everything is the same. People are actually eating the same food all around the world. And by not having this diversity, is why we have so many diseases, and we have similar diseases as well, high cholesterol and diabetes and so on. And the thing is, people say we are eating organic and all this stuff, but as a matter of fact, all the seeds in the world are manufactured by monopoly companies or like oligopoly, like 2-3 companies. They produce all the seeds and you're not eating organic, actually. You're still buying from them because they are making the seeds. So that's, and they are mostly like GMO, like genetically modified. Genetically modified organisms. They always try to fix some genes and make the plant more survival. But if they use like the nut, if they use the, I forgot the name now, how do you say it? If you use the mother of the seed, like the origin of that seed, that one is resistant to everything. It's insane. Mm. And another issue that he explained is that many farmers use the same crops every year, but what's happening is the depletion of the minerals. Mm-hmm. So we're eating corn, but are we getting all of the nutrients? The answer is no, if you compare to many years ago. And sometimes I hear my parents saying, oh, tomato during this year was so tasty compared to now. And it's true, because the earth and the soil makes such a big difference if you use the same crop every year, whereas you rotate the crops. In South America, they had this great system, milpa system. They plant corn and they plant also beans. And what happened is that beans produce nitrogen, and nitrogen is a great fertilizer, and they use it as a rotation to get for corn to get the nitrogen. And they exchange the nutrition together. So they put in the same land, like different combination of stuff. And this is amazing, I think, how the old knowledge have been used before and people didn't know. They just eat this. And it looked like it gave more yield to them and they use it. But now all this old knowledge, it feels like it's getting lost. And this book explains it very well. So I really recommend this.
Very interesting. I never thought about from the point of seed. I always thought, okay, organic and natural, yeah, we're growing it. But the source is the seed which is manufactured. That's very fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Actually, what's more fascinating, I will tell you a very fun thing. When I think of citrus fruit, I always think Mediterranean countries, Spain, Valencia, I don't know, California oranges and stuff like that. The truth is, the origin of this, how do you say, the species of the citrus root comes from India, actually. It's a tribe in India. I forgot the name of the place, but that's where you find it. It's very bitter. It's a green one, and that's the mother seed of all the citrus. And every time the farmer have issues with their crops, they have to get the mother seed, and they put it on the, I don't know, they put it with combination with other things, and it removes all the problems. Oh. How fantastic is that? It's amazing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And who knows that India is the home birth for citrus fruit?
That is fascinating. Yeah, the story sometimes gets so much altered that we completely forget the origin story, where it actually started. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's interesting. Okay, so that's the second book. The last book that you want to recommend? Anything else?
Anger. Learning to manage anger. There are many books. I don't have a title, like specific title. I have read maybe several of them, but learning about anger, learning how many types of anger there are and how to channel this energy. Because many cultures have misconception about anger and they consider anger as an emotion that is bad. It's a negative emotion. But anger has such an energy in the body that if we don't remove it from our body, now many studies are showing that the emotion, anger, is what brings us autoimmune diseases and so on. So it's very important to learn how to manage your anger and how to communicate properly. Imagine many stuff we fight with our partners or families and anything. And it's because we don't know how to manage our communication and how to manage anger. We explode or we keep it inside, or we are passive-aggressive. There are many styles. And learning how to deal with anger, I think, changed my life in the sense of changed my relationship with people. I know how to communicate better with my husband now. I know how to communicate better with my mother, father, friends, boss, anybody. It changes a lot of things. And for young people, it's very important, I think, to learn this as a skill.
So I'm curious about why you got interested in the subject anger in the first place. Was it something that you were dealing with, or you noticed more in people, or did you experience that more after marriage? Like, what was the case?
No, I realized on myself, I am a person who really likes to reflect, and I'm very aware of who I am and my emotions. So I realized that when I got angry with something, I got upset, and I don't know what to say. I'm like speechless. And I realized, oh, wait a second. Maybe I don't know how to communicate well my anger, because obviously something triggering, but what it is. So I started to do like deep analysis on myself and learning the why of I have that, because a different conversation with different people can make you angry for different reason. And usually it's about values or respect and pride, and there are many things. And this is something that I understood, and I start to analyze it on myself. And then I realized that, wow, all my life, many people I met, even family, they have anger issues. They don't know how to manage their anger. And that's how I realized it.
that's
first hand experience.
Yeah. A lot of us definitely have a negative association with the word anger. So as you said, we think it is something that we should not experience, or we should not have.
You shouldn't experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
or if your child is angry, no, you are a good child. You shouldn't be angry. You should be happy. No, let them be who they are. If they are angry, let them be angry.
Right. Exactly.
It's normal. Yeah, it's normal to experience.
So one of the questions I generally ask my guest is, and this was, I think, originally I had heard it on a Tim Ferriss podcast, and the question is so good that I thought I should definitely use it in my podcast also. So is there a belief or an assumption that you had held for a very long time, and in the recent years you have changed it?
That's a very good question. Many beliefs I had in the past are totally changed now. And one of them, I told you, is working. Being rich is working with a company for many years, and then you retire and that's it. Now I change that value. I don't see it like that. I see that you should work for yourself, for your own. Of course, it has its own challenges. I'm not saying it's easy and everybody should do it. No, but it's something that makes a big difference, because if you follow your heart, then everything will make sense. Like everything will make like a connection. You're doing this and then something else will happen, and everything you do in life will connect together. And a second thing I learned is, Manoj, is how to say this. I thought that if you follow a certain path, you cannot go back to do another thing.
Mm-hmm.
For example, let's say you are working and you are spending many years in this company, or 10 years, 20 years. And then if you want to go back, for example, now you always wanted to become, let's say, a doctor. I don't know. I'm just saying an example. And people think that at that point where they are in life, it's hard to go back and take another decision because it's scary. And you can lose anything and you can screw up all over. But in my experience, I have done this thing that I invested a certain amount of time for doing thing and it didn't work out. And I could start again all over and it was no problem. But this is a belief that many people probably have that they cannot do and start over. And they should, if they want to. They definitely should. And probably that will be it, but I forgot now. I might have more. I don't know.
No, that's good. Yeah. I think what you just shared is very profound. That's called the beginner's mindset, right? So when people climb a certain hill, they say you went all the way up the hill. Now for you to start something new requires you to actually come down all the way, start from zero and again go back. And many feel that I have already walked this far. I have come in my career this far. So why would I want to let go and start a scratch? But then sometimes you're climbing the wrong mountain. So that's a problem.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like you keep throwing stuff and until it works. That's my mentality, at least. That's why I don't have fixed rules or plans. Yeah, what are you going to do after 5 years? I don't know. Maybe I have become a doctor. I don't know. I am very open-minded in the sense that always you can start over, no matter what, basically.
That's great. Speaking about perspective shifts, now you have learned a lot of life lessons over the years with different experiences and exposure to so much different ideas. If you were to give the advice to somebody who's starting up early on life, like you're meeting somebody who's a youngster, 18 years old or something, she's just starting out her life, what would be two or three really important advice do you think you will pass on, which will really help her shape her life better? What kind of advice would you give? And I think you did touch upon some of the interesting ideas already.
If I would, I always think this, if I, what I wanted somebody to tell me when I was young is learning my self-worth, learning to say no, the second thing. So the first thing is know your self-worth, learn to say no to people. And probably third is financial independence, freedom, financial independence, how to get there. The most important for me is the self-worth. Many women get in bad relationship with people or even from society or families. They are not like seen as valuable. So by understanding their own self-worth and by believing and loving their self, respecting their self, they can achieve much, much more in life. And they are happy with themselves and the choices they do. If they don't believe in themselves and if they have issues, their partners many times will take advantage or they will get mistreated. So for me, as a woman, it's very important to know my worth, to know who I am, to respect myself. It's very important to respect yourself, to forgive yourself for mistakes you do, and to love yourself. I think this is one of the best thing I can say. How to say it? One of the first tip or first advice. The second thing is learn to say no. Society, families often teach women to be kind and gentle and lovely, and you should say yes, you should help people. Yes, you should do those, but you need to set up boundaries. And to set boundaries, you need to learn who you are. You need to learn who are your values. And you learn those through failing in life, obviously, because you cannot learn those right away. You are 18, you are young, you are full of energy, you don't know everything. So by failing with stuff, you learn those values and you learn to set up boundaries. By learning to set up boundaries, you learn to respect yourself and to say no when it's needed. You have to say no to somebody who tried to bully you or somebody who behaves bad at you, somebody who forces you to do something, just say no. For women, I think this is a bit hard. For me too, like saying no, it's has been hard in the past.
Yeah.
And now at this certain age, I'm very confident to say no. And it's end of the story. But before I felt not confident because I feel I have to please people to make them happy, which is not my duty. It's not none of my responsibility. My responsibility is to make myself happy, to take care of me. So by shifting priorities of yourself and other people makes a big difference in your life. Mm. So, yeah.
Those are, really key advices, I think. And the art of saying no, I think that is something even adults fight quite a bit because we are so programmed to say yes to things. Even though we mean it or we don't mean it, we tend to agree and start doing things which we really don't want to do. So it's too hard to say no. Yeah, I think it's a very important skill.
It's hard to say no. Yeah, it's very hard. In work too, like we have to do things just because somebody say that, but sometimes it's out of our capacity, our time and stuff like that. I'm not saying people should not do the work because this might be translated else, but learn when to say no when you cannot do something. Don't push yourself to the limit more than that. It's going to be a bad outcome. So yeah.
No, great advice. Great advice. How do you define success? Like when you think of the word success or successful, what comes to your mind? What's your most recent definition of that?
It's knowing who you are and being happy with what you have. Not title, nothing achievements, like, oh, you did this university or you got this job. For me, that's not success. This is just something that you probably wanted, you got it. But desire shouldn't be mixed with success, in my opinion, because it goes to a bad path. You will start to evaluate yourself based on your accomplishment and you always want more and you will be unhappy because you have so many desires. So for me, success and desire are not something that goes together. It shouldn't go together, in my opinion. Success is when you are happy with you're doing nothing and knowing yourself. I think human is such a beautiful creature and complex in itself because our mind is so powerful and sometimes it starts to guide us and be different. We should manage our mind, not opposite. And sometimes our mind have so many fears and try to find things when they are not. You shouldn't allow that. You should be the master of your mind, not the opposite. So by having this in yourself, for example, in this point in my life, I don't have any career achievements or any titles or anything, but I consider myself a happy person, a successful person, because I don't need anything to tell me who I am, because I know who I am. So that's my definition.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think it's not a common definition. I think we are all always measuring our position in society compared to others, right? We are just seeing,
exactly.
Fitting in, are we doing better than our neighbors? There is this constant comparison. So it's it's again a road to misery. Please.
Comparison is such a evil path that often I struggled as well when I was young, like comparing myself with some people who were same age and were doing things. And wow, she's so rich, or wow, she's having this brand clothes. She got this Gucci Prada bullshit like that. And I realized that why am I comparing myself with them? Everybody has their own path. My path probably is different from somebody else. Not everybody's going to be like Angelina Jolie or Brad Pitt. Everybody has their own path. And I believe that humans are born with something to achieve in this life. Yeah. I believe in this diversity and differences in people. For me, those are just like... At that moment, when I was young, I thought it's important to have those, but not now.
And I think the point is not about not having things. I think we can still have an appreciation for finer things in life. You can have a good home. You can have a tasteful fashion choices. That is one's choice, but you don't have to measure it against others to feel successful. That's the point, right?
Exactly. So. Exactly. But if you start to use that as a value, then it goes down the drain. Because it's a very bad path. Yeah, I wouldn't like to take it.
All right. So I have maybe a few more questions before we wind down. I wanted to ask you, are you into movies? Do you watch movies or documentaries? Are there anything that you would like to share which are interesting?
I don't watch a lot of stuff recently. I like to listen like podcasts. I like to listen Manoj's podcast. And I listen as well.
It's a very good podcast, Manoj's podcast. Everybody must listen. Yes. Yeah.
I love it. It feels very, how to say that, down to earth, very honest, simple, and easy to digest. I learned a lot. There were some entrepreneurs you interviewed on the previous. And then I felt this, I'm going to come back to you with comparison, because I thought, you are inviting me to this podcast, but oh my God, I haven't achieved anything. And what can I say? I'm not an entrepreneur. But you said something very kind. We are not comparing things, and you have very good experience. So maybe I was happy to hear that.
No, that's the truth. That's the truth. Yes. So you're telling me about the podcast that you listen to, or the music you listen to.
Yeah, I like to listen to Joe Rogan podcast. I think he is very quirky and sometimes funny, and he's curious, like genuinely curious, and I like his questions.
He's not afraid to ask questions, right? The hard questions.
He's
to
not.
His game.
I really like that. He challenges them, and no wonder he's the number one podcast in the world in this moment. I like to see No Reservation by Anthony Bourdain. No, Anthony, I forgot his surname, Bourdain. He's like a chef, American chef. He died years ago, but he travels around the world and tries like many different destinations, and is very written well. I think he makes very good points of the food culture and so on. Whereas other chefs in the world who has done travel documentaries for food sometimes lack those skills. So I really like that. And I like to watch it sometimes. But other than that, I don't even own a TV, Manoj, in the house, because both me and my husband think it's just unnecessarily noise. I haven't used the TV for maybe 10 years now, since I lived abroad. I never had a TV. I only use computer as the main source of information, or my phone, but no TV. And I'm happy with that. I'm very happy. I don't know. Do you own a TV?
Now when you say it that way and then you ask me the question back, I feel very bad saying yes.
Okay, yeah. I'm not comparing with you.
No, I do get your point. I do have a television, but I do not watch the conventional TV. I enjoy movies, and I watch it when I feel like there is no schedule. It's not like a regular affair. Maybe whenever I feel like, I just go watch a good movie. And I'm notorious for watching movies that I've already watched. So I can watch that maybe five times and I still get the same joy.
Yeah.
That's
cute. That's kind. Yeah.
Yeah. But then I'm not into a regular TV watcher. I think since the use of computers have become more common, I think maybe I may be on YouTube compared to maybe just watching on.
Same here.
To actually go in the YouTube algorithm, there's so much interesting content it throws out based on what you've already watched. It starts showing you more such feeds. So that's an interesting rabbit hole that we can go on YouTube itself, I feel.
Yeah, that's so true. I didn't mean any bad intention. It's just funny. But yeah, we don't own a TV. So I sometimes go to cinema just for fun, for pleasure, because I like to see it on the big screen, and the feeling of cinema, it feels a bit like nostalgic for me. But I don't watch a lot of movies. Yeah, mostly YouTube or Netflix, and sometimes just phone.
Okay, I have one more question. But before that, I want to ask you, is there a question that you wished I asked you?
Manoj, you are killing me with this. You have very good questions, man. I love the flow. Don't know. I think you have asked almost everything to cover many things of my mind, and I couldn't put it in words. I am a bit messy as a person. So
no, I think all of us are.
Nothing comes in my mind now.
No, is there an aspect of you which very few people know and you think they should know? So is there something that if somebody hears this podcast, they'd say, I never knew this about you? Like,
I think I touched a little bit this in the early, that people don't know, think that I am capable of traveling anywhere in the world without any contact person, without anything, and I can still manage to do anything I want.
No, I beg to differ yeah. because you definitely have, you're living that life. You actually flew all the way to Japan and you're living that. I'm sure people definitely
people
know that.
People probably know that. Yeah, that's something I never thought about it. Yeah.
Yeah, like you're actually walking your talk with your action. You have proven that that is what you believe
true,
and stand
that's
for.
That's true. That's a good point. I never thought of that like that. I was trying to find something, but nothing comes to my mind, actually. And I think as life has changed, my values and personality has been more shaped. So I think people don't expect it that I would go to Japan as the first thing. And they always wanted like the cheerful person, the energetic, and something that not that they wish they learned, but as I said to you, going back to conversation, is that by knowing who I am and when I put boundaries, many relationships in my life that I had cut it. I cut those toxic people, those people who didn't understand me and so on. I didn't have the desire to please them. Yeah. For what? For no reason. So now people think I'm an arrogant person in that sense. My mom thought that one time when I went and I said, hey, I'm not going to do this. Don't bother me. Or she thought, wow, since you go abroad, now you become a different person.
You have changed a lot, you know.
Huh? Ina, you have changed a lot. Ma, I didn't.
Awesome,
just because I didn't clean the house, for example, or very simple thing. My mom thinks I changed a lot. Yeah,
it's funny that you could be the most well-known person in the world and your mom can still think you haven't done anything great in your life. Like, it's always the case. I mean, like, you haven't made your bed. So.
How dare you? Yeah. In my case, my parents always have a saying on things that I do. For example, I talk to my mom, I say a conversation with her and I say, yeah, it was like this. And she said, why didn't you say that? Ma, the conversation is already ended. How can I remember?
Yeah,
I didn't even think about this. Yeah, you should have said that. Mom, it's finished. They love to give opinions. It's funny.
So cool. All right. My last question. And So what kind of impact do you hope to have through your work? And what would you like to be remembered for in the world?
Yeah. I think I just want to encourage people following their heart and curiosity. This is something through my newsletter I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
And with my tweets or with my work in other areas as well, I try to promote this idea of being yourself and trusting in you and being confident and important to learn about yourself and so on. So that is something I want people to get from me, to be happy with what they have, to not compare themselves with other people and just follow their heart, doing stuff that they always wanted to do and just do it, basically. And I don't know if I want to be remembered for anything, or I don't have any desire to have that. So I'm not pursuing anything now at this moment. Maybe we should do another interview after 5 years or something, and then you should ask me the same question.
Why not? I think, but that's beautifully said. I think, yeah, you definitely come across to me, at least from internal philosophy, more like Zen. You really are very detached with a lot of outcomes and you just follow your curiosity. So I really appreciate you sharing your time. I think if people were to find you online, where can they find you? What are your social handles that people can explore?
Yes. So I write a newsletter on Paragraph and the handle is Be Curious, but the B with double E.
B with double E, yes.
And I have a Twitter account, which is not so big though, but it's still okay. You can follow me there.
We will put the links in the show notes.
Yeah, you should put the link better. Yeah.
Yeah, don't worry about it. That's fine. All of us, like, sometimes we don't remember the people that we call so frequently because we just dial their name. We don't look at the mobile number. So we can't remember these details.
That's a good one.
And I believe you are starting a new venture in the space of tea. Do you want to share a few things about that?
Oh, yeah, I can share that. Yeah, there is this event coming up in California. It's going to be in May. And I'm going to promote some very good tea from Japan. Thanks to this relationship, I worked in food industry before. I made very good connection with farmers and wholesalers and distributors. And as a matter of fact, I'm going this May to experience the farming of tea and I'm going to learn how to make matcha as well. So it's the green powder tea. And I want to learn firsthand experience. So I went there to this farm and I talked to them and they said, yeah, sure, come. They were very chill about it. And I think I would like to explore the world of tea. And now I'm really enjoying this adventure because it's something I'm feeling is like my ikigai, like something I'm born to do. I don't know. And funny enough, yesterday I was reading about it, a story, and it was for the tea ceremony in Japan that they do. Somebody said that when you enter to this tea ceremony room, leave your ego behind, throw that.
Yeah.
We don't care who you are. We don't care about your who as a person, as a pride or whatever. Throw that. You are coming here naked in this room. And I find that very profound, like very wow. Sometimes we as a human, we get sick egos and stuff. By learning this simplicity in life, makes such a big difference. So that's what I want to bring and develop a tea business, perhaps with USA. Because, Manoj, new news, I'm going to move to San Francisco this summer.
Oh, yeah. It's happening. Oh, okay, so you're moving there.
It's happening, yeah. Okay. This is something I haven't shared with family members yet.
I will release the podcast and send them the link to your family.
Yes, they'll listen. Yes. They're like, what? Again? Yes. Oh, so my idea is making like a tea ceremony, bringing a very good tea from Japan, and making like a shop there as well, so locals can enjoy. Yeah,
that's wonderful. I think we'll put the link in the show notes of the tea business. If there's a link that you can share with us, we'll add that.
Yes, I'm working on the sites and I'm making all the product mock-up and stuff, so I don't have the website yet.
Cool.
Released,
online, cool. It comes up, I think people who subscribe to your newsletter, they will get an update. So I think would recommend people to subscribe.
Yeah.
All right. This has been total joy. I really had such wonderful time with you. And I'm sure that this is just the beginning of a lot of many more conversations to come. So I'm so happy that you came on the show and I hope you enjoyed it too.
I'm so happy I was part of this show and part of this conversation with you. It's just lovely. I felt something like very honest conversation and I can be me. I don't have to be shy, or I'm not introvert anyway, but still I would feel shy because this is my first podcast to do in the world. So I was very excited and happy. So thank you so much for inviting me and it was a total pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
All right, that concludes this episode. Hopefully you had fun listening to it. If you really want to get access to the show notes, make sure to go to my website, www.rareearth.com. That is www.rareerth.com. Yeah, it does not have an A in it. And you could also subscribe to my weekly newsletter, which is called as One Idea. Once you're on my website, you can see a link to subscribe to the newsletter as well. That's it for now. See you on the next episode.